I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard.
Happy Friday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the 4-Hour Chaos Theory Kegger. GA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border, Anchorage to Atlanta, Cincinnati to Sin City, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. We are on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Well, Rocket can. Hey, thanks so much for being with us. It's a Target Demo Friday, everybody, which means it's time for you to let us know what you're up to, where you're listening, and how you're listening. We'll get to those coming up in hour number 4 of the show. We've got a big show coming up for you. London Fletcher's going to join us, longtime NFL analyst, NFL Ironman as well, former Pro Bowler. London Fletcher's going to join us. Fletch, drop it on by hour number 4 to preview week number 2 of the NFL season. On a Friday, we always have NFL picks from Mraz. That's the Up the Gut segment, which also includes Mraz's infamous and signature football foods of the week. We'll do that coming up here next hour. With his picks comes the challenge, season-long college football picks from Super Dave. Last week, Mraz went 2-1 on the NFL picks. Super Dave went 1-2 on his college picks. Super Dave will join us in hour number 3. Tom Brady responds after Bruce Arians called him out. In the NBA last night, the Celtics absolutely imploded, and what a gruesome scene after game number 2, where Boston collapsed with a double-digit lead. The Heat come roaring back, grab a 2-0 series lead. Marcus Smart is heard in the post-game hallways and locker room, shredding his teammates, and things were thrown. So we'll discuss that at length coming up here on the show. Also an exciting one in the Eastern Conference Finals, Game 6 last night in the NHL, and the Bolts clinch a spot in the Stanley Cup Final with an overtime victory, meaning we have our pairings for the Lord Stanley's Cup. It's going to be Dallas, it's going to be Tampa Bay, and it's going to be the Stanley Cup Final. We'll talk about that in Canadian Bacon. All of the news that's fit to print from the ice coming up in 20 minutes. And in 40 minutes, this date in mothership history. So we have a lot to get to this morning on the show, as we always do on a Friday. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, and an NFL game last night. And the NFL game is where we are going to begin. Going into last night's Thursday Nighter, we spoke all week about the problems that beset this Browns offense after week number one. Whoo, boy, where to begin? I mean, the Ravens just absolutely chopped them up. Baker Mayfield was a mess. The defense couldn't stop Lamar Jackson and company. Odell Beckham had 10 targets, but yet only caught 3 passes for 22 yards. And after the game, when asked about what happened between Baker and Odell Beckham, Kevin Stefanski threw some gasoline on the fire by saying it's something we're going to have to get to the bottom of, making it sound pretty ominous. So we talked about that this week. And last night, smartly, the Browns went to Odell early and smartly got him engaged in the offense early and smartly mixed the pass and the run, and up front that offensive line was devastating against the Bengals. And when the dust settled last night, the Browns had their first victory of the season and the offense was clicking. The question today, is the Browns offense fixed? It's where we begin. Your cold open.
Mayfield waits on the snap. He's got it. Third and goal. He's stepping. He's throwing. Hunt's wide open. Whoa. Caught it. Touchdown, Browns.
Hey, couldn't miss that one.
Kareem Hunt was wide open as he leaked out of the backfield on the right side, caught it, and tumbled into the end zone with a backpedal.
We just show up and play, and we try and learn from our mistakes and be one game better each week. It's really, the guys understand that it's not a marathon, it's 16 sprints. So had our second sprint tonight, and then, you know, we're going to look at the tape, and then guess what? We're moving on to Washington.
Amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Oh, here we go. In the annals of NFL coach cliches, Kevin Stefanski, add him to the Mount Rushmore. It's not a marathon. It's 16 sprints. Oh, I see what you did there, Kev. I see what you did there. That was Browns radio on the call. That was Stefanski after the game. Here's the things I really liked last night about that Browns offense. I loved the way that Stefanski called that game. And you might know, or you might remember, you might have heard me all offseason since that hiring say, I like Stefanski. There was a lot of things I liked about him. He was not a trendy, sexy hire. He wasn't a Belichick wannabe. He wasn't a hard-ass, old-school guy. Stefanski was Ivy League-educated, but grounded from a working-class family, a guy that made it on his own, rose up through the ranks, bright, smart, innovative, but anchored in old-school football tenets as well, from having played and having gone through all of the rungs of the football world. I really liked the hire, and I know that it was not sexy because a lot of people never heard of him, but I thought he's the type of guy that the Browns need to change things. And I said it upon hiring. I'm sure you've heard me talk about it all summer long. I said it yesterday on the show as well. I really like Stefanski, and I thought last night His play calling was right on point. There was a rhythm and there was a purpose to it. When he said, we've got to get to the bottom of Baker and Odell, early in this game, it was obvious there was a mandate, let's get Odell involved in this game. And whether it was some short passes or the deep one for the touchdown, there was a concerted effort, let's get him involved, and that creates a different Odell. It's high maintenance, but Odell's also a fantastic playmaker when you put the football in his hands, and they did it last night, and you saw it on that touchdown score. Also, I thought that they obviously saw how well they could run the football early. The Browns' offensive line was just mauling the Bengals up front. Big holes. And both Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt ran hard last night. And when the Browns built the lead, Stefanski wanted to run the football. They did run the football. But also, when they had a lead, they didn't curl up and go into the fetal position. there was still some passing throws and still some imagination with the play calling. When Chubb and Hunt ran like they did, it makes your life a lot easier. They were phenomenal last night. Chubb ran for a 124 and 2 scores. Hunt, 86 and a touchdown. They both had runs over 25 yards. I loved that Stefanski felt the rhythm, saw what was working, was willing to adjust. Okay, let's pass early, let's run late, but let's not get too one-dimensional on either standpoint. And he got the football to Odell, 4 catches, 74. Jarvis Landry, 3 catches for 48. Austin Hooper had a number of targets thrown his way, 4 targets for him. Some catches out of the backfield for the running backs. And the offensive line killed the Bengals. I mean, just killed them. Good win for the Browns. I know the Bengals are really bad, but you want a feel-good moment, and the Browns got the feel-good moment. They played well. They got the win. That's what you're looking for. From a Bengal standpoint, man, Joe Burrow's going to be a player. And he's 0-2. But last night, Joe Burrow throws for 316 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks, and was harassed all night long by the Browns. I mean, he was in their kitchen, their Freddy kitchens, all night. And so Burrow almost never had any time. And Burrow had a few of those rookie moments where the eyes are wide and what are you doing and throwing it into the ground or making a questionable decision. But ultimately, he didn't kill him. And even though the Browns led by 12 late, Burrow just kept coming. Burrow was steady. He was motivated, he was energetic, and he just kept coming. And I got to tell you, there are many moments in a young quarterback's career that look ugly. And last night, you know, the Bengals take the L. But you get to see through the cracks those moments, and you go, oh, yeah, right, okay. And what did I say yesterday on the show? I said there's going to be 3 times in this game where you see Joe Burrow and say he's got the goods. There were more than 3 times last night. There were more than 3 times on his touchdown throws, on some of the... There was a throw in the second quarter where there is a receiver, there is a defender underneath the receiver and over top the receiver. It's about a 12-yard pattern, and Burrow puts it on the hands, perfectly falling out of bounds. Receiver catches it 2 feet in, first down Bengals. That's the type of throw that a second-game rookie does not make. He took the loss, but Zach Taylor knows what he's got in him. 61 attempts last night. 61 in his second game ever. Now, they got to protect him. He got killed last night. And there was a couple where my heart's in my throat because there's traffic all around his knees and there's Browns defensive players all around his ankles. Of course, there was the strip sack as well inside his own red zone, which leads directly to the goal line situation by the Browns and Myles Garrett recovering and stripping the sack. But overall, you could tell last night, yep, Joe Burrow's going to be just fine. Hey, Bengals, got yourself a cornerstone franchise QB. I'm convinced of it. I was convinced before that game. I'm more convinced than ever. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, and on Twitter, DA on CBS. Mraz, big takeaway last night of the Browns offense. What'd you think about them finally clicking into gear?
I think you saw the importance, as much as we mock it, of getting Odell Beckham involved early. You don't want to force him to the point where you're throwing balls, you know, 15 picks. That would never happen in a game, but you know what I mean? Forcing it into Beckham where the whole offense suffers. But if you get him involved early like they did last night, he is the kind of dynamic playmaker that every defense then focuses in on, and it frees up everything. The idea that the Browns, as Troy Aikman mentioned on this broadcast, have the most talented backup running back in Kareem Hunt and can come at you in waves with Chubb and Hunt, that's allowed. by the Browns having gone to Beckham early, taking the safety over the top, freeing up the run game. Then that frees up everything for Harrison Bryant and Austin Hooper and the tight ends to do what they got to do, and the tight ends could be Baker Mayfield's best friend. But by making Beckham happy early, and it sounds cringeworthy to say that, it's a benefit to the entire offense because it changes the way the defense has to play. He becomes a factor, and everything loosens up.
And did you notice that late in that game when the Browns have the lead, it's Odell on one side,
yeah,
Jarvis Landry on the other side. Odell's got blonde hair. Jarvis Landry has purple hair. Baker Mayfield sitting in the middle of them, and they're all joking around.
Yep.
They're all laughing and joking and having a good time. And that's only the type of thing that happens between those three guys if they're winning and winning big. They made them happy.
Yeah,
Odell happy.
I have a feeling if the Bengals had come back, and the Bengals really survived a lot of punches last night and kept that game interesting, had the Bengals come back and won, I don't know that we have a happy Odell that he wasn't on the field for first or second down in that goal line situation where the Browns were absolutely stonewalled, where they just couldn't get enough of not understanding the run wasn't working around the goal line. We could be having a very different Odell with the yellow hair today screaming about why he wasn't on the field.
Also, I would probably have to take back all the nice things I said about Kevin Stefanski had they not won after that goal line situation. Wasn't Burrow great? Wasn't Burrow just a joy to watch last night?
And D.A., bring up something. He's not flappable, like an unflappable franchise quarterback when you were getting pounded like that. Bobby Hart might as well have not been on the field at right tackle. The Bengals might as well have played with four offensive linemen because he had no time off the right side. You know, Gio Bernard, I mean, it's basically a guy feels like a dinosaur now, not getting anything going on the run game when he was in there because he's trying to help pass protect. The offensive line's atrocious, but Joe Burrow just kind of calmly goes to the sideline. As Aikman pointed out, too, he's riding the bike. You never see the quarterbacks ride the bike.
Yeah.
He is just so cool and chill under pressure, and some of his throws are just absolute seeds. And also, I like the fact that there's not a ton of bravado after the big play, too. He just kind of calmly goes about his way. We had a lot of questions. We had Carson Palmer on Radio Row saying Burrow should think twice, not even go to Cincinnati. Burrow kind of feels like the right temperament, and I don't want to get too ahead of myself, to find a way for this organization to right the ship finally.
Totally. He's a winner. He's a winner. And I think what Joe Burrow went through early in his career, being really chopped down and humbled, and then rising to what he did at LSU, has given him this perfect balance of he's not a diva, he's not a prima donna because of all the things he went through. But boy, does he have confidence. And he's got it because of what he went through last year at LSU. And he's just like, we're still in this game. We're going to keep coming. I'm leading this team. I mean, you saw they gave him the captaincy. He had the big C on his jersey last night. How often does the rookie in the NFL have the C? But you can see why. You can see why. He's already the leader of that team. And he's a total winner. What a stud he's going to be. When we come back here on the show, exciting night of the Eastern Conference Finals in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We have a winner. Mraz has your Canadian bacon coming up. DA, CBS.
The sizzle of the best goals. The saltiness of the best games.
He's without a stick. He makes another save.
Crave the nightly action in Edmonton and Toronto of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That's a hockey, you know, it's only a game. Why do you have to be mad? He's a good guy.
It's your morning serving of Canadian bacon. Only on the DA show.
Bacon.
Why you have to be mad?
It's also an Ask the Pros Day where you guys get to throw a question out to me, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet at me, DA on CBS. Ask the Pros brought to you by O'Reilly. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. It was a game six in Edmonton. Dallas was already waiting in the Stanley Cup final. Who would they play? The Islanders staved off elimination in game number five. Could they do it again in game number six? Mraz, take it away.
It was a thriller indeed in Edmonton. The game was tied at one. We headed to overtime. And with 6:42 left in the first overtime, Anthony delivered a cold-fired pizza.
Charlie after the puck, right circle. Going to keep it alive in the right corner. Right corner, Goodrow. Markley Goodrow behind the net. In front, Cirelli. Shoot! Is it in? Score!
Is it in?
Cirelli! Yeah. The Lightning win it! It's over! Stanley Cup final! Here come the Lightning!
Dave Mishkin melting down on the Lightning Radio Network. Yes, Anthony Cirelli is Italian for overtime goal. The Lightning end the Islanders season and head to a Stanley Cup final where they will take on the Dallas Stars, who have some new jerseys, DA. Game one Saturday night. Victor Hedman had the other Lightning goal, and as you always know, to the victor go the spoils. The Lightning now sit four wins away from hoisting the Stanley Cup above their heads. This, a year plus removed from being the top seed in the postseason, only to be swept embarrassingly by the Blue Jack Rabbits in the first round. After this overtime win, they feel like Beyonce because they just might be Destiny's Child.
That was one of your best segments of Canadian bacon.
I'm not done.
You got a couple of chuckles. Well, I'm just saying that was one segment. A couple of chuckles out of AB and a couple of good puns. AB, what do you think?
I vote for just stopping here. I don't know that you can get better than Destiny's Child. That was your peak. Anything else, I assume, is going to be down from here. So if I were you, I would just stop.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking ahead. I got to go for it one more time. I got to go.
Okay.
Let's run it through.
Let's continue.
Soundbite. I'll explain one. Soundbite of the day. The Islanders season, in all seriousness, an enormous success under Barry Trotz to make it to Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Final. But the sting was obviously there in being eliminated, especially, boys, the Islanders killed off a four-minute Lightning power play at the end of regulation to start overtime. Second straight game they had to kill a four-minute Lightning power play. Barry was calm and not too hot to Trotz in giving his team credit after the game.
The biggest thing is how much adversity we had to go through, the number of series, different people getting hurt, the strange events, losing in double overtime, losing late in games, winning late in games, having to grind it through.
He mentions adversity. He's spot on. The way this has gone, the time spent away from family, the Stars and Lightning, in my opinion, will play for the hardest Stanley Cup to ever be won. And also of note, if you're looking for stock prices, look for pasta, butter, and dino chicken nuggets. A lot of stress eating may be had on Long Island. That going through the roof. And that is your Canadian bacon.
Okay. That's a lot of bacon being made right there. Barry Hotz to Trotz. I don't know. Let me ask you, Mraz, a little hockey question here. Who was the MVP of the Lightning of the Eastern Conference Finals?
I still say it's got to be Braden Point, although he was hurt a lot in this series, because just his presence on the ice, along with Nikita Kucherov, I think changed a lot of things. He had some big moments. So I would go Braden Point per game, as much as I really would love to give it to Alex Candy Killorn. But Braden Point's been enormous. Nikita Kucherov has been enormous. And Vasilevsky as well in net for the Lightning, and they just seem like a machine right now. I made that Beyonce joke, but it just feels like this is their year.
Are they a better version of themselves than last year when they blew everybody out and gained the President's Trophy?
Well, it's hard for me to say that. They're just a different version, especially since Steven Stamkos has been injured. I mean, they don't have the presence of Steven Stamkos on the ice. And with that, I mean, think about how great this team could be. I think they just have this grinded-out mentality that they will not be denied, piggybacking off last year. But as far as talent goes, it's hard for me to say they're a better version of themselves. Maybe mentally, they're just the better version of themselves.
Is this crazy that the Lightning are doing this without Stamkos?
Yes, it is. But look, you see what kind of star Kucherov is. He may not have the name and lights the way Stamkos had for them, but John Cooper's also been a pretty good head coach for them as well. But yeah, when you think of, you know, when you lose your number one star and still have this flurry of depth with guys like I mentioned, like Braden Point and Alex Killorn, and they just keep coming and getting big goal after big goal, it's an unbelievable feat really in the NHL to be able to come at waves and play three-line hockey the way they do, where they can score at any given moment with any of their depth guys.
Stars and Lightning, Dallas and Tampa Bay. The ratings won't be great for the NHL, but the action should be. When is game one of the Stanley Cup final?
So game one is Saturday night, so big day on NBC. They got the U.S. Open, then they go right into the Stanley Cup final. Also of note, They're going to play every other day with the exception of this little nugget, if you will, this little Cam Newton nugget. They will get to a game four Friday night. I believe I have my spacing right. And then instead of going every other day and playing Sunday with the NFL happening for a game five, they will play back-to-back Friday and Saturday night for a game four or game five. So if this is a short series, they'll get it done before the next NFL Sunday following this week, this after last week, where they piped in the Lightning and Islanders at 3 p.m. in the middle of an NFL Sunday. So at least they are smart enough to know, hey, every other day except screw it, they're playing back-to-back day, three and four nights if we get there because we're not going up against the NFL.
And chicken
nuggets.
So we could have a Stanley Cup champion within the week by this time next week, by this time next week or Saturday, we could have a Stanley Cup champion of the NHL season wrapped up from the bubble.
Let's go. Piggyback it all the way. Piggy doodle dandy, Canadian bacon. Congrats to the Lightning.
Canadian bacon. Did the Lightning move on to the Stanley Cup final with the overtime victory? Now, a kind sir is standing by. His name is Andrew Bogish. If you're watching at WatchDA.com, inside the WatchDA or inside the Radio.com app or on Twitch this morning, you see a very colorful and creative T-shirt that the kind sir is wearing. It's dark blue or royal blue with looks to be yellow crowns. I can't see the entirety of it because it's hidden by our Zoom meetings. But what do we got there, Bogues? That's a nice T-shirt.
Thank you, Dave, for noticing. This is, you weren't here for this jersey conversation. I can't pull off wearing jerseys of people who are playing now. I'm too old for that. So the closest I can do is like an alternate homage shirt. So this is my Henrik Lundqvist Rangers goalie T-shirt representing his native Sweden. These are the three crowns that are on the Swedish jersey. I don't know, they're not on the flag, and I don't know what they exactly mean in terms of Swedish history, but this is a Swedish hockey T-shirt that I bought to support my boy Henrik.
Yeah, that's basically the Swedish national team hockey jersey in jersey form, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it does not say Lundqvist on the back. It's just a T-shirt. But it was bought with him in mind, my sweet Hank.
You're very nice.
Meanwhile, boys, I'm not sure why it's taken this long. It's been obvious for a while now, but Brad Stevens is not that good of a head coach. His Celtics built a 17-point second-quarter lead on the Heat in Game 2 of the Eastern Finals, then lost the third quarter by 20 points.
We pulled apart, and we didn't play well. And they did a good job. We're not beating this team if we're not completely connected on both ends of the court.
Now, Stevens' crew did stumble its way into a 15-2 run to retake a 94-89 lead, but then another collapse, losing to the Heat 106-101. That's a 2-0 lead from Miami, and 17 points matches the largest postseason rally in team history. Now, Stevens and every other Celtic downplaying whatever yelling and throwing of things happened in their locker room postgame. If the Celtics show up, Game 3 of this series is tomorrow.
Since the Celtics grabbed the 2-0 series lead in the last run against the Raptors, what, they've lost 5 out of 7. So,
yeah.
Last night was ugly. We'll get into this in detail coming up here next hour. But like you said, coming out of halftime, they just got blitzed. They had no answers for Miami. And then late in the game, they couldn't make the plays. And then Jaylen Brown misses that open three-pointer that could have tied it late. And then after the game, Marcus Smart is throwing things and calling his teammates out. There's basically one huge feud in the locker room. Gary Washburn reporting that this team is imploding on itself. I mean, geez, I thought the Celtics were like totally kumbaya, and instead they hate one another right now.
Yeah, but picture an episode of Big Brother and then play NBA. I mean, they've been on top of each other for 3 months. So
that's fair.
I actually don't crush this. We'll get this later. I don't crush the Celtics for melting down. They got to hate each other by now.
That's fair. And no Kyrie, so that's even more ironic that they still hate each other without Kyrie there.
So all that hate in the Boston locker room, but only good things in the Browns locker room last night.
Hunt will be the running back. Mayfield under center. First and goal at the one. Mayfield gives. Here's Hunt skipping right side. He's going to go in, and he's in and over. Touchdown!
Jim Donovan, Browns radio. Kareem Hunt's one-yard plunge basically put Thursday Night Football away. Joe Burrow did throw one more TD pass with 43 seconds left, but Cleveland recovered the onside kick and won 35-30. Hunt ran for 84 yards, caught a touchdown as well. Nick Chubb, 124 and two scores on the ground, so Zach Taylor's run defense might want to get a little bit better.
We got to get the guys on the ground when we got them in our grasp, and we got to do a better job just staying on our gaps, not letting the holes be as big as they were. But those are two good backs, and you got to give them a ton of credit. Their line did a great job as well.
The Bengals' offensive line, not so much. Joe Burrow in danger all night, sacked three times, lost a fumble while throwing 61 passes, again in a 35-30 loss to the Browns. Cornerback Sean Wade wants back in at Ohio State, and they're playing football this fall. The problem is Wade hired an agent after opting out of school. He's a projected first-round pick, but Wade says he never actually signed paperwork with said agent, so now it's up to the NCAA to sort this all out. The Mercury News says the Pac-12 is targeting Halloween to start football, but schools and local authorities need to sign off on the plan, and the schools in general need to agree on how much prep time their teams would need, again, if they even decide to play football. Piggybacking on Canadian bacon, DA, you know that Mike Modano is no longer a Dallas Star. I'll remind you that Vinny LeCavalier no longer plays for the Lightning as we get set for Tampa Bay and Dallas
in the
Stanley Cup Final.
Still have the female goalie? Is she still in?
No, Manon Raume is no longer in their organization. Yeah.
Great reference.
All of this, a 2-1 OT win in Game 6 over the Isles last night. Baseball last night, the Blue Jays headed for relegation after a 10-7 loss at Yankee Stadium. Toronto pitchers served up 5 homers in the 4th inning, 6 total, a record 19 over this 3-game sweep. The Yanks have won 8 in a row overall. The Pirates down the Cardinals 5-1. Cleveland won in Detroit 10-3, both ending 8-game skids. And the White Sox clinch a playoff spot with a 4-3 afternoon win over the Twins. Justin Thomas leads after round one of the U.S. Open thanks to a 5-under 65. 21 golfers total under par at Winged Foot, but not Tiger Woods, Dustin Johnson, or Phil Mickelson. Tiger and DJ shot 3 over. Lefty a 9-over 79 yesterday. Round two starts later this hour. Naomi Osaka will not play the French Open later this month. The U.S. Open champ says she has a hamstring issue that'll keep her from prepping correctly. And on night two of the WNBA playoffs, the Suns sent the Sparks home 73-59, and the Lynx survived the Mercury 80-79. Connecticut now plays Vegas. Minnesota gets Seattle in the best of 5 semifinals, which begin Sunday afternoon. DA, back to you.
Wait. I'm sorry. You just mentioned the French Open. Did the U.S. Open end?
Yeah, it ended on Sunday.
Did we ever get a winner?
No, they didn't. They didn't sign one. They just gave up.
They all went home already.
Wait a minute. We went through 2 weeks of bogus giving us meaningless tennis names and scores, and we don't know who won the U.S. Open?
No, everyone else does because they listened on Monday morning when I said more than once.
Who won? Was it
Dominic
Osaka?
Thiem. Oh. Yeah, well, first of all, she just won because I just said she was the U.S. Open champ. That was on Saturday. And then Sunday at 4 o'clock, the men's final was Dominic Thiem beat Alex Zverev in 5 sets. You must have missed that Sports Minute. I did one on that, too. You heard my WNBA one, but you missed my Monday U.S. Open Sports Minute.
Come on. Let's be honest, Bogues. Mraz had cheese whiz coming out of his ears after a day at Bob's Bar on Sunday.
Nope.
On Monday morning, there was no way he was paying attention to what you were saying about tennis. Are you kidding me? No way.
I mean, not for nothing. The W, with all due respect, can we not have Dominic Thiem playing for a title as Bucks and Saints kick off? Can we find a little better window here?
That was the point of my Sports Minute.
Well, when did you want them to play at 10 a.m. during? Hey, yeah, go up against Sunday morning football, but just don't go up against Bucks Saints.
Hold off a day. Play Monday at about 4 o'clock. We've got a nice triple header right at the Giants Steelers and it's the Titans Broncos. There's no fans there.
They tried that. Do you remember? They tried that when it was first on ESPN and they kept bleeding into the Monday night double header, so people were not paying attention to the end of that match either.
Stop. Enough. You want tennis to survive, stop going against football. We didn't even know Dominic won. Good for him.
Boy, I wish that we would have just stopped that conversation before it started and said, no, Mraz, they haven't played it yet. You want to make a bet? Let's bet on who's going to win.
Next time.
Okay. All my money on Zach is on Agassi.
I thought about that. I got in the shower this morning. I thought about that. I go, man, we still haven't gotten a U.S. Open winner, have we? And then I heard Bogus mention that. I wanted to bring it up.
Thought went into your head this morning on like 5 days later, like, where's my tennis Open winner?
I don't know why.
Come on.
Our first ever 3-week long U.S. Open concludes this weekend.
Marathon.
When we come back, this date in mothership history, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
step inside. It's this date in mothership history.
Let's go back 1 year ago on this date, 2019, when Mraz came to the lightning bolt of a conclusion. Wow, that's how the USC Trojans got their nickname. Let's roll tape.
The Trojan obviously could have the big hand up, leg up, because it's got a big sword.
It's a condom.
Do you think that USC is named after condoms?
Well,
do you really think that, their nickname is named after a prophylactic?
I never really thought about it, but that's all I've ever known a Trojan to be.
So,
like the Trojan horse is like a play on words?
Nope. That was more of a thing back in Troy. So what when USC has its mascot, what do you think that mascot represents?
I honestly,
the guy in the iron, in the armor with the sword.
Just like a warrior from past South Californian days.
You think that's just an old Southern Californian warrior?
I thought I read that one of the biggest boosters all time was the person who owned the Trojan company.
Condoms?
Yeah. Are we allowed to say condom?
Yes.
All right, so the guy who invented the condom, didn't he go to USC and he's like a big booster?
You think that's how they got the Trojan nickname?
Yeah, I think it's basically like an advertisement.
You think USC...
Then what the heck's a Trojan if it's not a condom?
It's a soldier of Troy. Like back in the...
Troy's a different university. That's where OC went.
No, back to the empires, the Roman Empire.
So it's a Roman... That's why they have the helmets and all that.
Yes.
So is that where the condoms got their name from?
Yes, I guess.
Do the condoms have anything to do with USC whatsoever?
No!
So the guy didn't go there that invented the condom?
I don't know. Maybe that guy did go to USC, but that's not why they're named the Trojans.
I thought this was all a big conglomerate, but I guess not.
That doesn't make any sense either.
A whole lot there to unpack.
Well, I think we have the addition to 2019 Year of the Buffoon montage.
All of that could have been the Year of the Buffoon just on its own merits. Mraz thinking the USC Trojans were named after the condom. Could you imagine going through your entire adult life and thinking that the mascot of an American university dating back to the 1800s was named after a box of condoms?
I'd like to have that one back.
Yeah. I would say so.
Oh, that one. Okay, you can have that one back. We'll keep the other 37,000.
So in retrospect, Mraz, how do you feel when you hear that segment?
That one is one where I'm team you guys. Like, wow, what an idiot. Because obviously I watched USC football and Keyshawn and everybody before I knew what a prophylactic was, obviously.
That's right.
So at some point, my guess is I probably had a few too many in my early 20s. And somebody messed with me on, oh, yeah, the guy went to USC. That's how they got the name Trojans.
Oh, you think you were tricked with?
My guess is somebody planted it in my brain. Because obviously you don't learn about the USC Trojans in school. That's not, a class. And I watched plenty of college football. A condom conversation had to have come up. And somebody must have messed with me one day and saying, you didn't know that that's how USC got their name. And I probably had it stored in my chestnut walnut of a brain. And that's where I came to that conclusion. So, and when I listened to that back and I realized how I was sinking there, but you don't realize it in real time. It just, you makes you shake your head and you go, how does this show get on the air any day?
Well, now you're coming around to my side. Now you know how I have felt for nearly 8 years. I shake my head at an adult baby sometimes and wonder how this show gets on the air every morning.
I'm not giving you back the Jackson thing. You've skewed that, and you won't understand the coincidence there, but I will give you the Trojans. I absolutely will and agree with you.
Our toll-free line, small wins. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more.
Would it be shorter to drive?
What does he mean he's not giving us back the Jacksonville one? What, you're standing by the fact that...
Yeah, he's not moving off that one.
No, because you guys have always made this since that a point of saying, remember when he told Michael Jackson and Jacksonville was named the Jackson 5 without... while burying the lead, that Michael Jackson's elephant ended up in the Jacksonville Zoo. You leave that part of the story out, which if you hear that part of the story, anybody with a brain will go, oh, I can understand how you can make that correlation because it is pretty ironic or coincidental.
No. See, this is where you're wrong because most people have context to understand that Jacksonville, the city, existed long before there was a famous Jackson singer to name itself after. Just like yesterday when you were perplexed by the age of St. Louis. How did St. Louis exist before the Declaration of Independence? That's the problem.
Bogus.
Here.
Bogus. Yeah. Last night you saw the graphic on the Browns-Bengals game. 100th anniversary of the NFL was last night. They have played football in, I believe it was 60 cities. There's been like 74 franchises. It was early in my lifetime that Jacksonville finally got an NFL team. If Jacksonville wasn't named very recently, why did it take them so long in 100 years of the NFL to get a team? Why do we go through 60 cities? I mean, they were like number 58 on a city to get there.
Well, Mraz, what happens if West Babylon gets its first NFL team in 20 years? Will you immediately say, well, I guess West Babylon didn't exist until the 2000s?
No, I'm not saying it didn't exist, but I'm
what
saying
what band was Babylon in?
Jacksonville had to have blown up to the point where, oh, wow, it was really popular, booming, that they could host a Super Bowl, get an NFL franchise and all of that. And when you hear a story like the elephant escaping them, you go of all the zoos for Michael Jackson's elephant, you start adding things up and going, well, this is how Jacksonville started the boom. Jacksonville. Well, was that named after Michael Jackson?
It could start to boom in the late 20th century, but it could exist earlier than that.
I didn't say, and I've always said this, I never said that Jacksonville didn't exist. My guess was they changed names. Like it could have been like St. Thomas River City or something like that.
And then they decided to change their entire municipality to Jacksonville because Michael Jackson is from
it's a popular family, the Jackson Five. If they put the town on the map, yes.
What would be the equivalent? What would be another town that was named after a pop singer from the 1970s or 80s?
I mean, look, Minneapolis has been around far too long to name itself Prince City, but, I mean, they basically want to. We talked about Flavortown, possibly Columbus, Ohio. And look, if you were to tell me 50 years from now, Los Angeles
again, Mraz, you brought up two examples that didn't happen, so we still don't have an example of when it happened.
But the jury's out. Like, you never know. Los Angeles could change its name to Kardashianville in the next 50 years.
It's not. I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen. Yeah, that would shock me. Yeah.
I understand the reach. The point is it all started with the elephant and the irony. You guys have buried the irony all along, and that's not fair to me.
Didn't it actually start with you confusing Prince and Michael Jackson, or am I now confusing multiple moments of idiocy with you? Isn't there a Prince angle to this story, too?
I mean, I've been to Prince's house. Is that how?
Yeah, there was a moment. I don't know if this was the moment. There's a series of Mraz's confusing moments that I think did confuse Prince and Michael Jackson. My question is, Mraz, how often when you were young did your friends purposefully tell you incorrect facts because they knew you were stupid enough to believe them?
Well, yeah, that's another tough one for me because I was like the smartest of all my friends. Like I was the one on honor roll.
Good God!
So I might have just gotten bad info from dumber people.
Imagine there's like a master list of like here are the things we told Sean, and they like they slowly cross them off as he figures them out. Damn, he got the Trojan one.
It's the greatest whodunit ever. They're just sitting there every day listening to Mraz stumble his way through American history. Yep, we told him John Adams was the Quaker Oats guy.
Check.
figured that one out.
Boise's in the middle. Check.
Oh, man, I didn't think he was going to get Columbus wasn't a pilgrim until his 40s, at least. When we come back here on the show, the Boston Celtics melting down last night. They fall down into an 0-2 hole, and there was chaos and friction and fighting after the game inside the locker room. We'll give you the reports on that and what happened to the Celtics coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.